Welcome to the Content and Media Matters podcast, a series of interviews with key leaders throughout the industry, all brought to you by the Content and Media team at Newco, a specialist global recruitment and executive search firm.
Welcome to the Content and Media Matters podcast. Your hosts today are me, Henry Johnson, Senior Consultant, and Abby Burnham, Consultant. And we're delighted today to be joined by Mike Green, Chief Growth Officer at Backlight. Having held various senior leadership positions throughout the industry, Mike began the early stages of his career working for AOL, the Caboose Family Publisher Community, and soon after, Mike rose up through the ranks and has held various senior positions within the OTT industry. Most notably recently, his time at Brightcove, ranging from a VP of Marketing and Business Development, along with leading strategic development and alliances. Now, Mike is working across business development, marketing, and cross-functional team leadership as the Chief Growth Officer for Backlight. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Well, thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Today, we'll be talking all things you, the content and media industry, and more. But to get us started, we always like to ask people the same question. How did you first get into the industry?
Well, I went to Brown University in Providence, Rhode Island, and I guess I majored in what I majored in there. My real actual passion or major, if you will, was WBRU, which was a commercial radio station run by college students. So it wasn't cool college radio in the same way as college radio is traditionally thought of, but we were running a real business. And that's how I ended up in media. And I was in radio after that. And in the early days of internet radio as well, you know, figuring out what assets we had that were over the air that we could also put onto our websites when it would take a long time to frankly listen or watch those things. And interestingly, that became a kind of even post-business school, that was something I stayed involved in. When I was at AOL, we had partnerships with, you know, AOL Radio as part of with CBS Radio. And that was always a big, you know, move towards streaming that led me to kind of where I am today.
Oh, brilliant. And that's one of my favorite questions. I don't think I ever hear the same answer twice. So I'm going to hand over to Abby, who's going to dig a little bit more into your career.
Yes, thank you, Henry. Always keen to, as Henry said, find out a little bit more about your background and your roots within the industry. Who or what would you say has been the biggest influence on your career?
Wow. Now, I've been really lucky to work with so many great teams and have had, you know, the opportunity to learn from a lot of really smart mentors. Honestly, at each stage, I've been lucky there. So there's kind of too many folks to mention. You know, sometimes people talk to me about business school, and I went to Columbia for my MBA, and if that was an important kind of growth stage or not. And while it was helpful for a lot of reasons, I mean, certainly I work in marketing now, and I got some good fundamentals there and some leadership fundamentals. To me, the 3 years I spent at AOL after that, in sort of the early days of kind of, like I mentioned, streaming, and AOL was doing huge things like Live 8, which were huge, you know, live stream concert events. Like that really, to me, both from a, you know, I went to Comcast after, those two stages were with the right people, solving the right problems, setting the right foundation for the industry that I think I work in now today. And a lot of those people have ended up at really interesting companies who are customers, partners, and so forth of mine.
Oh, fascinating. And always interesting, yeah, working your way through that, being at the forefront of what you're doing now. And following on from that, what would you say is the best piece of advice that you've been given over the years?
I think curiosity is super important at every stage of your career. And in my early days at places like Comcast or AOL, getting to know a lot of other colleagues around those large organizations. I mean, like I mentioned, those are traditional or terrific ways to develop a network. And you figure out what are the touch points between your part of the organization and what those people are working on. So for example, when I was at AOL and I was in business development for search, you know, AOL search had to help people find content from all across the web, as well as all across the, you know, AOL network of properties. And you get to meet so many parts of the, you know, organization, you know, who are looking after sports content or video content or whatever it is. That to me was a great, like I say, development opportunity, both personally and professionally. And so you have to be curious about what problems around you are trying to be solved. What are the economics of those parts of the business and how you can kind of partner? And that'll kind of be a win-win for both your career growth as well as I think the businesses you work in.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think that's key to any career path that you're in, continuing to learn and being curious about what you're doing. And obviously you yourself have worked in quite a variety of strategic and cross-functional roles across your career. what achievement, if you had to sort of highlight one, would you say you're most proud of?
Huh. Well, I got to tell you, the excitement of building Backlight. You know, we're now sort of 2 years into our journey. But you know, when I joined Ben Kaplan, who's our CEO, and he had come from PSG, which is a growth equity firm here in Boston, where he was an advisor and was working on the thesis. I started working with him and the great, you know, entrepreneurs who he had been in contact with and who eventually kind of came together to form Backlight. The process getting ready to launch Backlight and introduce what we were doing to the market was one of the most exciting things that I've been a part of. And so I was really proud of the kind of, if you will, the unveiling of what we had been developing in the April of 2022 timeframe, where we said, look, you know, we've been kind of in stealth mode, finding these great companies like Wild Mocha and Iconic and Zype and Celtics and F-Track, and bringing them all together into the new organization that became the Backlight brand. And the market reception we got, because that was right before NAB of 2022, was really positive. So that was a terrific, you know, experience for me to accomplish that kind of collective release of the brand and what it would mean for the future of this nascent company.
I can imagine doing a lot of work behind the scenes before you could actually release that to the public and seeing all that sort of work come to a head as well. And you've touched on a few of your successes there and have had a wide range of successes over the years of your career. Are you able to pinpoint any sort of key themes that have contributed to that success that you've seen?
Well, you know, I try and be a high energy and empathetic leader. There's a lot of things you always wish you could do better. But within every team that I've gotten to be a part of, we try and, you know, balance recognizing the great work being done, the wins, the progress we're making towards our goals with the things that we need to do better, the processes that we probably wish we had had in place, the conversations that we could have had earlier oftentimes to make sure that our outcomes were more aligned in certain ways to certain goals. I mean, that to be able to drive yourself to do better, yet not getting discouraged or down if you are coming up at, 90% of what perfect would have looked like. Like, there's, don't get hung up on every kind of missed opportunity. Just recognize a way to process attacking them better next time. I think that's one piece of my strategy. Hopefully that's resonated with my teammates.
Oh, certainly. That's really helpful for sort of advice, and always nice to hear a little bit more about your background. I'll pass over to Henry now to get into the present day.
Oh, thank you, Abby. And off the back of events such as IBC, the DPP, for example, there's definitely a lot of change in the industry at the moment, and I think a lot of challenges as well. But a bit of an open question here for you, Mike. What is your current take on the state of the content and media industry?
You know, so when Backlight was formed and we explained what we were doing, we were saying that we're set up to dramatically improve every step of the video content lifecycle. To explain Backlight just for a second to be able to better answer the kind of context question, you know, we've got software from the earliest stages of ideation, script writing, storyboarding, call sheets, pre-production, to production tracking, to media management, to distribution in the cloud, play out, fast channels, monetization, all that sort of stuff. And a lot of these problems in the video value chain were addressed in sort of a V1 point solution historically. And with Backlight, we saw each of these kind of fast growing and beloved products as being a version 2 in a lot of cases, or a better way of doing some of those same things across the video value chain. And each of these things also being easier to adopt and more open to interconnect with other solutions, both now our own inside of Backlight as well as third-party technologies, some of which even compete with things that we own. And I'm saying all this because, to me, the evolution of the video value chain or the market is towards flexibility, visibility, efficiency, which is unfortunately a really important word in this current market where people are being very budget conscious. And so to me, each of the things that are in our portfolio have those sort of value props. So to take Iconic, for example, which is our media management and collaboration solution, built for the hybrid cloud, whether your content lives in AWS or GCP or on-prem or in some computer somewhere. This is a product that's super easy to get started with. It's, you know, load up a simple account, a team of four people start using it, and then it grows to 8 people, to 16 people, to 32 people. This is a way easier way of attacking the MAM problem set that historically existed. And so in today's market, people want to move more quickly, more nimbly, more, you know, efficient uses of their capital rather than taking 6 months to evaluate and another year to deploy and millions of dollars. Like, we have a lightweight software driven approach to these problems, which is what I think the market needs right now.
Totally. And I think that's really useful context in relation to Backlight as well and how we can tackle that. And I suppose flipping that on its head, what do you think the biggest challenge the industry is currently facing at the moment, if you had to pinpoint just one?
Well, I mean, you're speaking to me now a few days after the strike ended, so this will post when it posts, but this has been a really challenging year for media, both in that sense, as well as just the sort of macroeconomic winds that have been, you know, a challenge as the, you know, the dollars of cable distribution model have turned in some cases into less profitable versions of the same streaming. And so those kind of headwinds in the media industry are sort of, I would say, playing out. And there's some consolidation that happens and that sort of thing. But the other challenges around like end consumer experience that persist in getting the new model right, those are solvable challenges. They're hard. They require, you know, strategy and great, you know, solutions and data to understand end user experience. But those are challenges that are exciting that I think we're going to get right. You know, the economics need to make sense, but that's definitely the direction that the end consumers are moving, that the business is going to continue to trend.
Completely. I think end consumers will always be a running theme throughout everything that we do. And I think looking forward to the future, you've been on quite a journey with Backlight already, and I think there's more to come. But what are you most excited about for the future of Backlight?
Well, for Backlight specifically, each time we have a customer who's super excited about one of the solutions we've been providing them, a product that they're using, some great results that they're achieving with those products, they start thinking about what other adjacent areas of their media workflow, for example, can we help them with? Or how maybe if they adopt multiple solutions, and this may sound cliche, can 1+1 = 3 because of the way we've thought about their business holistically, right? If you choose to adopt Iconic, which we talked about, and Wild Mocha, which is helping with live cloud production and streaming of big live events and streaming those out to social and clipping them for social. Those two things naturally have to work well together because you want to archive those big soccer matches or, you know, presidential town halls or whatever it is. And so when someone chooses to adopt Iconic and Wild Mocha and that sort of intelligent live to archive and back workflow gives them more value, that's something that to me is really exciting for our customers and for the future of Backlight, because for us, it creates more value in each relationship. It's for, you know, for stickiness, for efficiency, which customers are looking for. There's a lot of great kind of benefits. And so we've been thinking about, as we learn from our customers in each area, where can we do better and help them more with thinking ahead in that fashion.
Oh, no, I love that, the 1+1 = 3. And I can imagine it is a continuous learning as well of how they pair together and the effects that they have upon one another as you integrate and form. Well, that takes us quite nicely onto our topic, which matters. And this is focused today around workflows in the cloud. Stripping it back and a bit of an open question for you, Mike, what are some of the key advantages of leveraging cloud-based workflows?
Sure. I mean, the cloud itself, in terms of scale, is the huge win, right? Instead of these step functions of investing in additional infrastructure each time you have new opportunities, it's the cloud as an underpinning foundationally for everything we're doing, benefits, you know, any customer of the cloud, but also, of course, our customers, given that our solutions are running on the cloud. So that's the easiest answer. I think the sort of evolution of our cloud provider partners. And what's interesting is something like Iconic is trusted by all the major cloud providers inside of Microsoft and Google and Amazon. They have businesses that all also love what Iconic does for them, which is a nice kind of, I'd say, validation of our approach to security and scale and these types of things. This is the ecosystem that we're like super tethered to and invested in. So I think that the ease of use, the scalability, the reliability, and the increasing security of the cloud is the exciting part of it.
Totally. And I think security is really a critical aspect of any workflow, especially when it's with the sensitive content like streaming media. How does Backlight address the security concerns when it comes to those cloud workflows?
Yeah, well, we have achieved SOC 2 compliance for a number of our solutions. We've got big movie studios trusting us with their content, which in some cases, they're not storing it. In certain cases, they are storing it with us in the OTT services sense. In other cases, they're storing it where they're storing it, and they're using something like Iconic to keep track of where things are stored. But each time you work with a Disney or someone like that, there's a whole set of requirements, certainly, that you're going to be needing to meet. This is some of the most valuable content in the world. And so we have our approaches. We've got both kind of technical approaches as well as operational approaches to ensure that we're at the highest levels of security.
Completely. And I think that's something that's not going to change. I think it will be more of a focus as we continue to push forwards.
What's interesting here is we talked about the cloud, obviously, and that being a very important part of our strategy. We have one solution which, for security purposes, is known or valued for being an on-prem offering. That's something called Cinesync. Cinesync is an application that people would load on their desktop in different parts of a studio, let's say in LA and in Vancouver, and do real-time reviews of frame by frame high-end media and have color accuracy that you wouldn't get in a browser, which is why you do it in an application. But that's obviously the most secure type of approach to something like looking at the frames of a new Marvel movie or something.
No, that's really interesting you mentioned, because I think when people say not in the cloud these days, you think, why, what is the reason? I think that's a valid justification there. And you touched on it. Oh, please go ahead.
Well, as I was gonna say, sometimes also people at a certain scale, it makes sense to have a hybrid cloud approach, meaning hybrid on-prem and cloud working together, which is something that, again, we've talked about a lot with our customers. If they're operating a certain scale and they've got infrastructure, they're going to leverage that infrastructure and not run every workflow in the cloud. We sometimes say, bring your workflow to where your data is sometimes, rather than bring your data to your workflow, because that can be expensive with egress charges and sort of stuff.
Totally. And I think the choice is the thing that the end consumer wants as well. Do you want to do hybrid on-prem in the cloud? And I think it's great that you can offer that as well. And we've seen, particularly with live sports, that the demand for streaming services really fluctuates quite significantly. How does Backlight Streaming's cloud workflow adapt to these rapid changes in demand? I suppose both in terms of resource allocation, but handling those unexpected spikes.
Yeah, well, I think, if you're using our live streaming technologies to go to end consumers, everything, like I say, is set to scale in the cloud and to auto scale in the cloud. But in certain cases, you also having a good conversation with your account team would pre-provision or give that sort of have that open dialogue about what type of event we're talking about and what kind of scale is going to be needed. Certain other solutions of ours, like Wild Mocha, is very much associated with live sports and is used by broadcasters like NBC Sports. What they're actually doing with us in the cloud doesn't necessarily need to scale, because it's not our solution, is not what's delivering to the end consumer. They're using Wild Mocha to take their live broadcast feed perhaps and reversion it to be turned from 16:9 into a vertical, or to have clips being sent out to Twitter and Facebook or those types of things. The scale part is actually being borne by the end distribution point, like Twitter or something, or YouTube. If they're taking a live stream to YouTube, it's less for us to be worrying about scaling up to handle all those end viewers.
Interesting. No, I hadn't thought about it from that perspective as well. And I think one final question here before we hand over to Abby, how do you think cloud-based video streaming infrastructures can improve viewing experiences?
Well, I mean, the evolution of better compression and better bitrate ladders and better analytics on different endpoints to quickly feedback and adjust how we're delivering content to end users. Those are all the kind of evolutions over time that keep going in a more positive direction. I mean, the range of analytics around better ad experiences or about better OTT app experiences, not even the streaming part. Like, those are things that continually make all experiences, at potentially the Netflix level that a lot of content owners are striving for.
Completely. And it's almost like that saying, the data doesn't lie in terms of the analytics around the measurement and the engagement and tracking that as well. And I can imagine that adds a lot of value across that cloud chain.
Yeah. I mean, and I would hate to do a podcast in today's era without talking about AI, but I think AI has a huge role to play. I mean, you could call it, some of these cases, it's machine learning, which is, you know, understanding from a data pattern what the right, you know, answer should be for a certain compression, or how much compression can you get away with without losing any of the quality picture to the end user, given what device they're viewing on. You know, one story for us that was interesting is, you know, Wild Mocha has AI that's traditionally used for automation in terms of sporting events. So they understand every goal scored and red card given in a soccer match, make an AI-driven highlight package, push that out to social. Well, we have our other broadcast customers in some cases using the same AI to understand what ad was just shown in the broadcast feed and what is the right opportunity to show a different ad potentially in the digital feed. And those things were always done with SCUDI markers, but also now can be done with AI, which is using that Wild Mocha AI model in other contexts, which has been exciting.
No, AI sounds so exciting. And I know at the DPP, that was a huge buzzword. I think there was jokes around how many times can we mention it? And it's crucial as well. And I think it's great to hear how Wild Mocha is kind of integrating that already, as I know for some people, that's the journey they're on at the moment. And I suppose looking at AI across Backlight, are there any other areas where this is incorporated?
Yeah. Well, when you're sort of registering all the content that you have, all your media assets with Iconic, and again, we can store content if you want us to, but typically people are bringing their own storage. They use something from Iconic, you know, various AI models to enrich the metadata of that content so that it's easier to be searched, found, discovered, shared to other people. And that means AI to determine what images were in these videos or what do they represent, what language was spoken, or what's the kind of transcription-driven AI, all sorts of models like that that you can run. You can bring your own third-party AI model connected via API to enrich the metadata any way you want. So we do some of that in terms of, like, you know, getting into like facial recognition and that stuff to help you with, but you can also bring, you know, recognition for Amazon or Google or anybody else like that.
Oh, wow. No, it is fascinating. And it's something which I think we could continue to talk about for possibly the next half an hour, but I'm going to hand over to Abby now, who's going to take us through our quickfire round.
Yes. So we've obviously heard a little bit about your background, what you're focused on is at with Backlight Streaming at the moment, but always keen for our viewers to get a little bit of insight into yourself as an individual as well. So a little bit of a quickfire round, no clues here. What do you prefer, the city or the country?
Well, I live in Cambridge, Mass. So we've chosen to be as close to the city as we can be. We're a one car family. We try and, despite having to get people to a lot of places, being in the city helps us from that perspective.
Got you. Netflix or Disney?
I think Netflix these days. Too much breadth that we can't do that up.
Interesting. Plane or train?
I take the Acela to New York. I'm doing it tomorrow.
Oh. What was the last movie you watched?
The last movie I watched? Chevalier, maybe? I don't know if you know that one. It was in the theaters, maybe.
I've heard of it, actually.
No, yeah. No, wrong. Stop Making Sense. Talking Heads, Stop Making Sense. They reissued it for the 40th anniversary. And it's possibly the best concert film ever.
Interesting. We'll have to give it a watch. Mountain peaks or beach?
Gotta pick one. I'm going to say beach these days. Just it's a little more versatile for a family of five.
Makes sense. And your favorite game or sport to watch or play?
Soccer or football, as you folks would say.
Football.
Perfect. Yeah, football. Yes. Would you rather ride a bike, ride a horse, or drive a car?
Ride a bike.
Perfect. On the roads or mountains?
I commute on the bike when I can. So I spend a lot more time on roads than mountains. I mean, I love mountains when I can, but I'm mostly a road biker.
Got you. And then if you could only eat one meal for the rest of your life, what would it be?
Probably something pasta-based. Love Italian food.
Good choice. Good choice. Perfect. Oh, thank you very much for that. Always nice to get a little bit of personal insight as well. And we always end the podcast on the same question. And that is, what's one piece of advice that you would give someone entering the industry today?
I think it probably goes back to my investment in time to be curious and to meet plenty of people who are solving interesting problems. Like I mentioned earlier in my career, I had the time to attend trade shows and work with really talented teams in far-flung places. And, even at Comcast in my early days, we were working in the Xfinity TV apps. I got to really go deep with a lot of really smart people. And that's been very foundational for me understanding the industry that we play in today. So I would encourage people to do the same.
Completely.
Oh, brilliant. Well, thank you so much, Mike. That takes us to the end of the podcast. Really great to hear all your thoughts and insight, and a real pleasure to have you on the show.
Oh, thanks for having me. It was a lot of fun.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you enjoyed it, please do subscribe and give us a rating. It really helps these stories to be found and enjoyed by more people. For more information about NewCo, we can be found at www.newco-group.com. That's NEUCO-group.com.